Chapter 9. Nicholas wasn't really interested in his surroundings anymore, so the pokey interview room didn't lodge in his mind until Greg Mandel looked at him. Looked inside him, more like. Right through his skull, into his brain. The lawyer, Lisa Collier, had explained about the psychic being assigned to the investigation. She had seemed very irate about it, going on about how his rights were being violated, procedural irregularities, hearsay being taken as evidence. Nicholas didn't mind a psychic being appointed. Anything, anything at all which would bring the killer a step nearer to justice was totally justified. That was simple logic. Obvious. Why couldn't the Collier woman see that? He had been staying in one of the cells at Oakham Police Station since Friday, although the door was always left unlocked. "You aren't being held on remand," the police kept explaining. "You're just here to help us." He nodded at their anxious faces and answered every question the detectives asked. They seemed surprised that his answers were so consistent, as if he could forget anything that had happened on that night. It was the last night of his life. Nothing had happened to him since. There was only the mechanics of the body, eating, going to the toilet, sleeping. That was all he had done since then, slept and answered questions. He was allowed to mix with the other students, but they never expected him to say anything anywhere. They had moaned about the accommodation, about not being allowed out, the food, the bathroom. The one person he wanted to talk to, Isabel, was further away from him now than she had ever been at Launde. She would sit in one corner of the restroom they had been assigned, her legs tucked up against her chest, peering vacantly out of the window, and he would sit in the corner opposite, just gazing at her. He was too afraid even to say good morning, because if they did talk, he would have to hear about her and Kitchener and Rosette. What happened in that bedroom? How many times it happened? Even why it had happened? He couldn't possibly stand that. Kitchener had been the architect of his mind. For the first time in his life, he had really begun to think straight. Kitchener, with his own love of knowledge, had been the one who nurtured his talent, who made him realize his ability was nothing to be ashamed of, wasn't freakish like people said. Kitchener was the one who encouraged him to join in the Abbey's camaraderie. Kitchener had taken Isabel from him. Kitchener was dead. The world, which had been so close to becoming accessible, had eluded him once again. Which was why he'd said he didn't mind the psychic asking questions. After all, Kitchener had used neurohormones. They couldn't be bad. Except now he was faced with the prospect of actually going through with the interview. It didn't seem quite so easy. There was a very unforgiving quality about Greg Mandel as he sat patiently behind the desk. Some weary tolerance which even Nicholas, with all his social inadequacy, could recognize. The man had the appearance of having been everywhere, witnessed every human state. Excuses would not work, not on him. Yet at the same time, he could see how receptive Greg was. It was confusing, the two almost contrasting aspects of character existing side by side. Nicholas dropped into the chair, not in the least reassured by the formality of the proceedings, as Vernon Langley and Lisa Collier made their stiff lead-in statements for the AV recorder. There was something unnaturally creepy about someone rooting around in his mind. For a start, there were so many pathetic secrets about himself, all those hundreds of failings and disasters littering his life.
"I can't plug into your memories," Greg said in a palliative tone, "so you can stop worrying about the time you pinched your little brother's chocolate bar."
"I haven't got a brother," Nicholas blurted. "Only a sister, and I've never stolen anything from her."
"There you are, then. I can't tell."
"Oh, right."
He felt such a fool.
"How did you know I was worried about you reading my memories?"
"Because everybody does that when they meet me. Vernon and John here are worried about the cash they lifted from the station's Christmas party box. Mrs. Collier is extremely worried about her dark past. But the only thing I can sense inside a brain is the emotional content. So the sooner you relax and all that worry vanishes, the sooner I can ask the questions, and the sooner you can be out of here, okay?"
Nicholas nodded vigorously, secretly cheered by the way Lisa Collier's disapprobation had darkened still further at the jibe.
"Yes, of course. I do want to help."
"Yeah, I can see that. You really liked Kitchener, didn't you?"
Lisa Collier had warned him never to lie to the psychic. No matter how painful any admission, he would see it,
and it would be entered against him. I did. I do. But...
Isabel, Greg said sympathetically.
I didn't know about her and Kitchener, not before that night.
What time did you see her and Rosette going into Kitchener's room?
About 1:15.
And then what did you do?
Went to bed.
Did you sleep?
Suppose so. I was thinking a lot at first, but I was asleep when I heard Rosette screaming.
Before you went to sleep, did you hear anything?
No, Nicholas said hotly.
I mean, Nicholas, anybody walking about in the Abbey?
He knew he would be blushing again. Why couldn't he ever understand what people meant straight off? Why did they always have to use baby talk to get through to him? Oh, sorry. No, nobody was moving round.
So you didn't hear Isabel and Rosette leaving Kitchener's room?
No.
What were you doing in the time between leaving Yuri's room and seeing Rosette and Isabel?
Running the Atomine 12 data through a detection program. I was looking for dark mass concentrations.
Dark mass?
Greg sounded privately amused. Yes. In space. Kitchener was interested in them. He thought they might act as wormhole termini. You see, if you move a wormhole in a specific fashion, it may be possible to generate a CTC directly. A non-paradoxical temporal loop would... Nicholas forced himself to stop, chastened. He'd done it again. There was that dreadfully familiar expression of polite incomprehension on Greg's face. Sorry, he mumbled.
Don't be ashamed of a gift, Nicholas.
He looked up, startled. But Greg was serious. I go on sometimes, he said, limply. I don't realise. Cosmology is interesting, Mr. Mandel.
I know what it's like. My wife tells me I talk about Turkey too much.
Turkey?
The war.
It took a moment before Nicholas remembered the Jihad Legion. He had been 8 or 9 at the time the Islamic forces had invaded Turkey, so it was classed alongside all the other terrible incidents which childhood jumbled together. Oh, yes.
About the detection program, Greg prompted. Were you running it on the Abbey's Bendix?
Yes.
Until when?
When I saw Isabel and Rosette, 1:15. I couldn't work after that.
Did you use the English Telecom datanet that night?
Yes.
Why?
I had to. The Antimine data comes direct from its mission control in Toulouse. There's no other way of accessing it.
So you only used the one data link?
Yes.
Okay.
Greg typed something into his cyberfax.
Did you know Rosette was mildly insomniac?
Funny question. He couldn't think why Greg should want to know. No. But she was never tired at the end of an evening, when we were in a room or if we went to the old plough. And she was usually first up, so I suppose thinking about it, I knew she didn't sleep much.
Have you ever taken syntho, Nicholas?
No, he said, because it was true, so he could say it without any guilt showing. But he dropped his gaze in shame. There was an achingly long moment of silence. When he risked looking up, Greg was giving him a calculating stare. All his doubts about the psychic searching freely through his memories returned in a flood.
Let's see, Greg said. You took another kind of narcotic?
No, Nicholas said miserably.
Somebody offered you syntho?
Yes.
Rosette?
Yes.
And you refused?
Yes. I know Kitchener says there's nothing wrong with it, but I didn't want to.
I can see the incident has a lot of connotations for you. What else happened?
Nicholas decided the best thing to do was just say it fast. Greg might move on to another subject. He stared unblinkingly at his Nike trainers. The lace on the left foot was fraying. She wanted me to go to bed with her.
When was this?
November 3rd.
Did you?
No! She thought it was funny.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've been introduced to Rosette. So you knew syntho was available at the Abbey?
Yes.
Did you know where the vat was?
In the chemistry lab.
You were the first person to arrive at the bedroom after Rosette screamed, is that right?
Yes.
Did you see anybody else in the Abbey, apart from the other students?
No. Well... Nicholas tugged at the front of his sweatshirt. It seemed to be constricting around him. His skin was very warm. Both detectives were studying him keenly. This was all going to sound so incredibly stupid. They really would think he was backward now. There was a girl, he said reluctantly. Greg's eyes had closed.
his face crinkled with the effort of concentration.
Go on.
It was earlier, when I saw Isabel and Rosette. She was a ghost.
Nevin let out an exasperated groan, leaning back in his chair.
For Christ's sake!
Greg held up a hand, clicking his fingers irritably to silence him.
You said girl. How old?
About my age. She was tall, very pretty, red hair.
How do you know she was a ghost?
Because I saw her outside first. Then she was in the corridor behind Isabel and Rosette.
You mean she was out in the park?
No, right outside my window. I thought it was a reflection in the glass at first.
Your room is on the second floor, isn't it?
Yes. That's why she couldn't be real. I think I imagined her. I was very tired.
Have you ever seen the combat leathers which army squaddies wear?
Greg asked.
They are a bit like biker suits, only not so restrictive. Matte black, broad equipment belts, and there's normally a skull helmet as well.
Yes, I think I know what you mean.
Was this girl wearing anything like that?
Oh, no. She had a jacket on. That was quite dark, but it was just an ordinary one. I think she was wearing a long skirt, too.
Greg opened his eyes and reached up to scratch the back of his neck.
Interesting, he said guardedly.
Nicholas studiously avoided eye contact with the two detectives.
Hardly relevant, Mandel, Langley said. Greg ignored him. Have you ever seen her before?
He asked Nicholas.
No.
What about other ghosts or visions?
He hung his head.
No.
What time did you get up that morning, Nicholas?
7:30.
Okay. It probably was just fatigue.
He sounded satisfied.
A lot of squaddies used to suffer from it in Turkey. Amazing what they thought they saw after 2 or 3 days without sleep. There. Told you I talked too much about my old campaigns.
Nicholas smiled tentatively. It didn't seem as though he was mocking. Greg yawned and squinted at his cyberfax.
When was the last time you washed?
Lunchtime, just after the lawyers finished briefing us about you conducting our interviews.
Nevin's face split into a huge grin.
No, Nicholas.
Greg was labouring against a similar grin.
I meant last Thursday. When was the last time you washed prior to the murder?
Blood heated his cheeks and ears.
Just after 7 o'clock, before I went down to supper.
Nevin frowned and pulled out his cyberfax. He muttered an order into it and scanned the screen. Greg had turned to watch him.
Must have been later than that, he said in a low tone.
Langley took the cyberfax and looked at the data on display. Greg joined them. The three of them put their heads together, talking quietly. Nicholas squirmed unhappily. He wasn't sure what he'd done wrong this time. At least Greg hadn't accused him of lying.
What sort of wash? Nevin asked. A shower. We've all got showers.
He pointed at the cyberfax screen.
There, see? The back of his hands are as clean as his legs.
Yeah, but the particle accumulation on both is quite well established, Greg said.
That doesn't mean...
Nicholas stopped listening. He remembered the body scan they gave him when he arrived at the station. It was in a white composite cubicle, similar to a shower. A sensor, like a brown bulb the size of his fist, had telescoped down from the ceiling on the end of a Waldo arm and slowly spiralled round his naked body. He had imagined it sniffing like a dog. Then there had been the blood tests, the urine sample, his clothes taken away for examination, finger and palm prints recorded.
Did you wash later on?
Greg asked.
After supper?
Yes, my hands, a few times. I went to the toilet, and we were eating peanuts in Yuri's room. They leave your hands sticky.
The time is wrong, Nevin insisted.
It's not tremendously reliable,
Langley said grudgingly. We can't contest anything with those results.
What is it?
Nicholas asked, pleased that he had found the courage from somewhere.
The amount of dirt you were carrying on Friday morning is rather low, that's all, Greg said.
He closed his eyes.
Tell me again, what time did you have a shower?
7:00, about 7:15. We have to be down for supper at 7:30, you see.
And you didn't have another shower later?
No.
He's telling the truth.
Is there a point of contention?
Lisa Collier asked. Greg and Langley both looked at John Nevin. The detective gave the cyberfax screen one last scan, then snapped the unit shut.
No.